Hello and welcome to The Week of Work. My name is David Gibney. I'm your host this week and I'm joined as always by my co-hosts Conor McCabe and Michelle Byrne. We normally go to the front page of the papers, but before we do, just a shout out for our Patreon. That's www.patreon.com/leftblock if you want to support the Left Block podcasts, of which this The Week at Work is one. And you can find out more on the Patreon as well or at leftblock.ie. We are going to go straight away to the front pages of the papers before, I think, well, it's probably going to be on all of the pages of front pages of the papers anyway, about the Housing for All plan. So we do plan on giving you an in-depth sort of analysis around some of the stuff that's gone on this week around that stuff, as well as some of the other items in the paper. So who wants to go first on the front pages of the papers? Michelle, what have you been looking at there?
So I had a look at the Sunday Independent because someone told me there was lots of housing coverage in it, so I picked it up. But there's an interesting front page story anyway, and it's property prices set to soar by 12% for the first time since the crash. So yeah, there's also a very strong picture of Dara O'Brien looking very serious and going to take the housing crisis very seriously. But yeah, the piece itself is talking about a report from the Professional Auctioneers and Valuers, the IPAV, and yeah, so essentially house prices have rose nationally by 6.25% between January and June of this year, and it's on a trajectory to keep going in that direction. And yeah, very, very worrying, obviously, because where is the 12% to go from where we already are? And you have the minister then saying, oh, that's not a good result, as if he hadn't somehow been involved in the creation of this. It talks about as well, like very briefly, about some of the plan, not in any detail, but kind of the question around, you know, how is this plan going to be realised without enough workers to build the plan? And he's expecting a lot of construction workers to come in from Eastern Europe and the UK, and he's talking about bringing in visas from workers for non-EU countries as well. But yeah, so it talks about Waterford and Limerick being the worst affected in the last 6 months. And I've seen that locally, obviously, here myself. But yeah, it talks about focusing on affordability. This is what the report is saying. But really, yeah, the piece is a bit weak. It kind of just touches on lots of different people's opinions. The former LDA chairman, John Moran, is concerned about the Housing for All plan. Central Bank is concerned about the Housing for All plan, saying that it needs 50,000 more homes, not the 33 that's in the plan. And then you just have various people saying, we're not convinced about the plan. Yeah, that's one of the big stories in the front page, just kind of O'Brien saying it's like the hikes aren't sustainable. At the same time, he's released a plan where, you know, we're not really addressing any of the affordability or the cost issues in his plan. So I'm not really sure, you know, what the plan is there at all. Not in the plan. There's two other stories on the front page as well. One is a third of cabinet use an app that wipes text. So this is about the use of Signal by ministers such as Heather Humphreys, Pascal Donoghue, and most of the Green Party ministers. And obviously, there's concerns here. Some are saying, oh, we don't use texting for government business. But then you read other stories from like Leo Varadkar and stuff, and they're saying, oh, I would never delete any government business that I do over text. And then the Green Party are just refusing to comment on whether they use it for business at all. So interesting triangle of events there. But yeah, so Signal is the next step now. And I'm sure this kind of there's a lot more of detailed stories about, you know, obviously Zappone and why this people are looking into this, the use of Signal and stuff as a part of political business. And then the other story is not really a story. It's more kind of like a commentary from Brendan O'Connor on the front page, kind of odd, but it's talk wee all the way home. So this is Piglet Gate and talking about Zappone, obviously, as well. And he kind of likens, if Catherine Zappone is Piglet, then is the Taoiseach, or is the Taoiseach Eeyore, and Pascal O'Donoghue is Winnie the Pooh, and Simon Harris is Tigger. So making a bit of humour out of it all. But yeah, I suppose like fair play to the Piglet Cafe, wine bar, whatever it is, getting the most promotions it's ever got in its life and not having to put a penny into it. So I've never heard of the thing before. And I don't think anyone else did. Obviously, that's why they assumed that it was some sort of weird nickname from Catherine Zappone. But yeah, fair play to them. They're getting a lot lots of promotion for themselves. But yeah, it's just a piece talking about how the Taoiseach managed to accidentally derail poor Dara O'Brien's housing plan, God help him, and that Catherine Martin's fobbing off, saying that the casual leak from the cabinet around the Zappone appointment was actually, it's a matter of Fine Gael, nobody else, because apparently she's not in government. So yeah, It's interesting. And there's also a piece here as well. Meanwhile, Micheál Martin's enemies in Fianna Fáil are using it to portray him as weak, which some thought is rich coming from a bunch of guys who still haven't managed to get a heave together after all of this time. So yeah, just a bit of a commentary piece on the front page, just a bit of humour, a touch of tongue-in-cheek. But yeah, that's the front page of the Sunday Indo today.
Right, okay. Just on the Signal thing, before I go to Connor for the front page, whatever paper he's been, like, Signal obviously has been growing this year. It's not that all of your tech, I don't know if you guys use Signal, I do, right? It doesn't automatically, you have to set it to delete your thing, which is the exact same as WhatsApp. You have to, you can wipe everything on WhatsApp too. It's almost like the boogeyman argument here that they're using Signal as a negative. I'm in a number of Signal groups with people from outside of the EU because of their concerns around WhatsApp's data protection policies. So, and these are people in Australia and America and all, and none of them use WhatsApp whatsoever. It's only Signal. So it's just, I don't know, it's a ridiculous story. Connor, what newspapers or what front pages have you been looking at there?
Yeah, there's the like Sindo and the kind of Business Post. And again, it's all housing, you know. And yeah, it probably is kind of worthwhile kind of delving into the housing plan itself, because not from what's been covered kind of so far, which is the kind of detail, but for me, it's about what's been missing from all this whole kind of debate just in the last kind of 3-4 days has been kind of affordability, and how there's a really strange, messed up definition of affordability that has been somehow has been accepted as normal. That no one has said that affordability is linked to your income. If the plan, nowhere in this plan is affordability linked to income. Mm-hmm. It's all about price, and it's all about trying to alleviate price. The thinking here is that we have, this is from their point of view, that, and this is the analysis and also the government's kind of plan as well. So, you know, like going back to, and I don't think we can ever, you know, kind of tired of like saying this, is that Irish newspapers and the Irish media, it's a second class, and it's a very strange one. And we are reading their, this is their own, these are their newsletters. This is how they like talk to themselves. And I find, so like what they, how they're treating this is that there's a bit of market failure here. So what we need is a plan that will address market failure. So what we have is like a kid and, you know, it's learning how to cycle. So you put stabilizers on the wheels, and these are the stabilizers that'll keep that market going. No, what we have here is a complete disconnect there between income and rent prices and house prices. There has been a decoupling of rent and like mortgage kind of payments from people's income. And that's the fundamental fault line in the Irish housing market or sector in terms of rents and or kind of purchase as well. Until that is addressed, there'll be nothing going forward. And nowhere is that addressed here. Like, just give you a sense of what we're dealing with. In terms of incomes, 50% of all people earn less than 30,000 a year. Now, what the kind of middle class fanzines say is that oh well, some of them are like working part time, so you know it, that doesn't matter. What matters here is that baseline: what is people's incomes and what are they being charged then for this? Based on kind of 30,000 a year, if you're on 30,000 a year, in order to have a stable housing, rental and purchase market, rents and mortgage repayments would need to be around 420 euros a month. That's what we're talking about. And that's half of incomes. When we get to 75% of incomes, they're earning less than like 50K. So then around like 700 euros a month. This is what we're talking about here. So unless that is addressed, there's no going forward in any kind of plan going forward here. And nowhere in this does it deal with that issue of how do we address the decoupling of incomes from what people are being charged.
You know? What's really interesting about that affordability argument, and you've given us a couple of examples of the earnings that we see across the economy, right? I just quickly scribble down those figures. So 30,000 euros per year, 50% of people earn less than that. So according to the central bank and their rules about affordability, which is that you can borrow 3.5 times your income. So if you're on 30,000 euros per year, you can only borrow 105,000 euros, right? Now, let's go back to 75% of people who earn less than 50 grand per year. They can, at the central bank rules, they can borrow 175,000 euros, right? And according to this Housing for All analysis that I read in The Examiner and in the Business Post, everyone's talking about 250,000 euros being affordable, right? For the 250,000 euros to be affordable, you have to be earning 71,000 euros per year. But we're saying that less than, and it's probably far less than, but less than 25% of the population are earning that type of money. Connor, you want to come in on that, do you?
Yeah, I mean, just on that point, like the reason why the central bank has those rules is to avoid instability being injected into the kind of banking system, right? So what, like every time you go for a loan, the banks never ask you, what's your dream? How much do you want to pay? They say, how much can you afford? And that's their kind of bottom line. So they look at your income and they go through your income. And the reason being is that they want to avoid injecting instability into the banking system. Right. And that's at a kind of systemic level. So what they're saying then is that if you have people paying more than 25% of their income on either rent and or kind of mortgages or any kind of long-term repayment, that will inject instability into the kind of banking system to maybe kind of defaults. So we can't allow that. And yet, when it comes to rents, we are injecting instability into the rental and housing purchase market all of the time. And the instability there is homelessness, people staying at home till their 30s and 40s, people having families later or like not at all of these things, you know? So, well, like there's a reason why banks have that kind of linkage from income to expenditure is to avoid instability being injected at a systemic level into that system. And yet that is precisely what we're doing in terms of this. And that goes for, like, you know, even parties of the center and left will talk about cost rental around kind of 900 euros and 1,000 euros a month. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so like we need to be like, but for me, there's a lesson here from the good old kind of capitalists that they want to avoid their system falling apart. So they don't allow or try to avoid that like instability being injected into their system, but we allow it in terms of the housing plan. And the reason being is that it's really about profit. It's really about the price is not being set to income, because the price is what the builders and developers set, and that's what they want. It's their 7% kind of guaranteed back return.
And as usual, they're the priority, and the renter or the person attempting to buy a home is collateral damage in a system that's built for the profit-making enterprises or...
Yeah, like the elephant in the room here is wages. That's it. And I have not heard anyone talk about wages in the last kind of 3-4 days. Sorry, Michelle.
Well, actually, Dara has started to mention wages.
Oh, has he? Fair play.
But he's talked about suppressing construction workers' wages, actually.
I saw that.
That's what he's talking about. So if we're talking about wages, that's where we're going. This is in in a place where we're looking for more builders, where like severe shortages, and the same sentences he's talking about, and now we can't be bringing the wages up now, do you know? And like wages, construction workers' wages are less than they were 14 years ago. And like the cost of living has gone up, inflation, all of that, that's all happened. And yet he's saying, no, how dare you negotiate an SEO, or how dare, like, at the same time when he's trying to be like, everyone should come in. But like, is he going to rely on migrant workers that he feels like he can, that can be taken advantage of? Or, you know, is that what's going to happen? Because that's what it looks like.
This is where, like, you know, in the interview, and it's a very interesting kind of interview, because like you can see where he's fallen back on his own kind of ideology. So when wages are like brought up, as you said, Michelle, he gets into, oh, we don't want to have wage inflation here, you know? Well, I mean, like, you know, like the problem here, though, is that like they're building houses which at these prices people can't afford. That is part of the plan, because the big difference with today and let's say 15 years ago is that houses are being bought. They're just not being bought by people. They've been bought up in like huge numbers. In like significant numbers, enough to kind of set prices by transnational capital. And the plan is actually to bring in more. Like that's one of the things in the Housing for All kind of strategy, is that the Department of Housing is going to set up international roadshows and go around like world and say, come to Ireland. Like you already know from the REITs, that the REITs have, you know, in their kind of brochures, say, have actually that, like, Ireland has the highest kind of profit margin for rental at the moment. If you go with a REIT, it's 3.75%. That's your return, and it's the highest in, like, Europe, you know? So they'll do the like same here. They're talking about capital kind of coming into Ireland as if it's a Bill Gates Foundation. You know, it's going to come in here and ask for 3.5% kind of return, or 7% if it's social housing. And that's according to like Bill Nolan. He says in his PhD that like what he would look for social housing is double the kind of profit margin. He would expect 7% for like social housing. The reason being, he doesn't say it in his PhD, but the reason being is because it's a guaranteed payer. And the guaranteed payer is the state. So he can get that and not be subject to so-called kind of market forces. So wages for me is the dog that doesn't bark in this entire kind of thing. And even from you know, kind of other parties, shall we say, you know, that like, you know, it's not been kind of talked about. And that's a real problem, because, you know, we can bury our heads in the sand here and just pretend that somehow the market can be tweaked. Or we can actually say the fundamental problem here is that rents and house prices have been decoupled from wages. That really started around 2002, and Humpty Dumpty hasn't been put back together again. So, sorry, Michelle, I'm just ranting on there.
No, it's just really interesting, because like it's not like Dara doesn't see this, because in the interview in the Indo, he's been asked about, he's been challenged about the affordability question. And he actually makes that comparison of like actually linking affordability to people's wages. He says, there isn't a simple answer to the question on affordability. What is affordable to a couple on 150K is different to a couple on 50K. Affordability depends on someone's ability to pay. He has literally said that 2 days after releasing a plan that has absolutely nothing to do with affordability being linked to people's income.
Yeah, I mean, in his interview, like, you know, did you see the bit, you know, where he talks about his house that he bought in like Malahide for 580K, and he bought it in like 2006, so he's still in kind of negative equity. But the interesting thing there is that he says that if you build more houses, price will drop. The year that he bought his house, there was 88,419 new houses and apartments built that year alone. So in 1 year, his entire plan for like social housing, 90,000 units, that was built in 1 year, in the year kind of he was. In the 5 years previous to that, there was 420,000 housing units built. 420,000 new housing units kind of built in the 5 years kind of previous like to that. And even after 420,000 new housing units being built, he's still paying 580,000 for a three-bedroom terrace house. And he doesn't understand, and he thinks that because they had this weird idea that it's market forces. This is capitalism. Let's name it. This is what it's about. It's about profit. And you can see it from his own experience, but he can't see it. He can't make the connect that you can build 400,000 housing units in five years, 400,000 housing units in 5 years, and still be charged double what you would have been charged if you bought the house prior to those 400,000 units being built.
Well, lucky for me, I didn't get to read his interview, but I did read the bit there, which is in the Business Post today, about do we have enough workers? And I think it's an important point that you're raising there, Michelle, about, you know, are there enough builders to build 33,000 homes a year, which is what's in the plan? And they're saying, no, we need 27,500 extra workers in construction, right? And Darragh O'Brien knows what he's talking about when he says wage suppression. Because if you need 27,500 workers in an industry, what tends to attract people to that industry is decent wages and terms and conditions of employment. That's the supply and demand capitalist market system, right? But he's already got the finger on the pulse and going, no, we need to suppress wages and terms and conditions. So how do you attract people to an industry to work in it if you're going to suppress the wages? Because he knows, obviously, if these people get decent pay increases and decent wages, that the cost of the housing might go up as well. But I don't know, Connor, do you want to talk us through some of the stuff that's in the Housing for All plan? Because we haven't actually addressed some of that stuff. I do want to come back to some of this stuff around capitalism, because one of the things that strikes me is, you know, it's almost like we're waiting on the private sector to solve the housing crisis here. It's almost like waiting on capitalism to solve the climate change crisis. I mean, the problem with our housing market is capitalism. The problem with climate change is capitalism. It's about that constant growth stuff and the climate change stuff. And yet nobody's making those connections. Let's go through some of the stuff that's in the
housing. Like just on that, like instead of, you know, well, I did kind of say this, that always capitalism, but like to kind of put some meat on that, they are saying, oh, we need to kind of get to a market. And you have like John Moran, the former juice bar manager from the south of France, who ended up head of the Department of Finance, which, I mean, that's a sketch in itself, really, you know. How do you go from being a juice bar manager to head of Department of Finance? You know, it's, anyway, but like, but John Moran, a juice bar manager and banker, said we have an overheated market and that's the problem. Again, just falling back on these kind of cliches. They're talking about as if there's a business plan out there that these builders will embrace if it's made available to them. They have their business plan and it's working out quite well for them. They're making millions out of it. Profits are up. Did you see that? Like, I mean, profits are up for these kind of developers by astronomical profits, 63% year on year for some of them. This is their business plan. They have it. They have it down pat. And this plan will not change that kind of business plan. It's there. What they're doing is that they're trying to alleviate some of the price by using taxpayers' money to subsidize some of the price. But the builder and developer, they still get full whack. Some of it is coming from the state, and then some of it is coming from those who are able to like borrow. Like in the plan, you have the affordable purchase scheme, which apparently now is a non-runner till at least 2026. And then even after that, who knows? This is the front page of the Sunday Business Post. But even with that, what they say is that this is where they say that they will give a mortgage, that if you can get a mortgage up to 200 Annick 50,000, or your house that you want is 350,000, the state will give that 100,000 and take shared equity in your home, right? That's the plan, up to 30% direct equity in the home. If I was selling the house, if I saw this plan now, and I was selling the house for 200 and like 50,000, why would I keep it at that? I know that the government's going to give me free money. It's going to give the buyer free money up to kind of 100K. So if the house is like 250, I might as well charge 300,000 for it, because the buyer will still be able to buy it at like 250, and I get an extra 50,000 because the estate has said that it will do this. That's why the central bank is so against it, because, and that's why they're saying that this will lead to kind of price inflation. The state is saying that we will give you 100K. So the 250, now 350 will be the new kind of benchmark. Just prior to this, there, Michelle, I did a quick check of house sales in Ireland up to now. So I did Waterford, and the median price in Waterford now is 250. So half have been sold for like 250 or less. And that's apartments. That's also houses that are derelict and need to be kind of fixed up. It's everything. So half are like 250K and then half are over 250K. So even before this plan kind of comes in, why would Waterford stay at like 250? Because it should now be 350, because the state will give you 100,000 more. You know what I mean? Like, you know, kind of for these schemes. Now, as it is, you know, we'll see kind of what, it's the cost rental that we can held up, I think. So in the plan itself, they're talking about getting up to 300,000 new homes, apartments and all kind of houses up to 2030, and 90,000 that are social housing, 36,000 that are affordable kind of properties, and then 18,000 that are kind of cost rental. And cost rental, that's another day's work even on that. Basically, in the cost rental, the state, I'm paying you to build a house and you get to keep it. That's the plan. So I pay you over 30 years to build this house, and at the end of it, you get to keep it.
Right.
That's what, because I'm covering all the costs in my rent.
Yeah, so
if the state gives land, then that's even worse, because then the state is, if I'm a builder, I get the tenants to pay for the cost of building the house. I then get free land from the state then for that, and I get to keep that land after 30 years then as well. Like, this is just ridiculous that this is even kind of being kind of put forward. It's been put forward because it's a sop to this weird, anyway, that's another day's work. And I can feel myself even kind of starting to kind of, to lose kind of listeners here, because I'm just a horrible fucking angry person. Just on this kind of last point, because they keep on saying this about that this is the most ambitious plan of all time, you know, not since Jesus fed the 5,000 has such a miracle been done, like, you know. And they're talking about building 33,000 housing units a year, right? Gearing up to that. That's public and private. That's everything. That's the whole play. The last time we had that low level of house construction in Ireland was 1995. What we're at now in terms of like 26,000 was 1975, with a much lower kind of population. So like in the 2000s, we were averaging 45 to 50,000 housing units a year, building up to like 90,000 in 2006. It's an insult to our intelligence to say that like 33,000 is the benchmark. It is 50,000, as the central bank says, and as the wine bar owner says, or sorry, the juice bar owner says, you know. But the reason why they don't want to build kind of 50,000 is that that's not what the industry is asking for. It all goes back to this is a plan for the industry, and the dog that hasn't barked is affordability has to be linked to income. And anyone, any plan, any party that doesn't have a plan that speaks to income first and then works upwards to affordability, instead of starting at price and then working down via kind of subsidy, we're into a problem.
And of course, my day job is working within the trade union movement. So wages are something that I'd have a fairly solid grasp on. And, you know, this plan does very little for people on a retail worker's wage. You know, they're the ones that are really suffering in all of this stuff. But like Ireland has, and we were going to review a number of other types of media outlets, one of them of which is Socialist Voice. And if people go onto their website, they'll get one of the articles there by, I think it's by Eugene McCartan. But in that article, and he quotes Neary, the Nevin Economic Research Institute, they're talking about Ireland having a relatively high share of workers in low pay, up to two-thirds, which is, low pay is defined as up to two-thirds of the median wage. So I think, Conor, you mentioned the median wage being about 30 grand. So two-thirds of Irish workers are earning, two-thirds, Ireland has the highest prevalence of low pay in the EU behind the UK, but sure, they're gone now. So we are the highest prevalence of low pay now in all of Europe. So if you have that, and I know, Conor, it's your line that I'm going to steal here, but if you have these two corresponding policies, one of a policy of having low wages, and you have that through no collective bargaining, no access for worker for trade unions to go in and speak to workers, really strong restrictions around strike and industrial action and all the rest of it, which is what we have. We've among the most restrictive trade union rights in Europe. And again, that's in this article by Eugene McCartan. Low pay is widespread, but it pays to be in a union is the name of the article. So you have that policy of low pay and restricting trade unions and how they can behave and act. And then on the flip side of it, you have a policy of inflated house prices and rents. You're gonna have a crisis. And I know I was looking at some of your posts on Twitter and on Facebook during the week, Conor, around, you know, we didn't have a crisis in the 50s or 60s or 70s and all of that stuff, because this is what people are quoting and saying we need to do it better, like we did in the past, like we did in the 50s and 60s and 70s, when in reality there was a housing crisis as well. But people need to get a grasp of this, and maybe we can get into a discussion here, or maybe not, I don't know if people want to, but about what the real solution is. Because to me, nothing in the Housing for All plan was a surprise, nothing. Because I knew they weren't going to tackle it. They have no interest in tackling this issue because it's working quite well for the people who it's supposed to work for, as you say, Conor. You know, that we have in the Business Post this week, I don't know what page it is, but we have James Benson from the Home Builders Association, you know, celebrating what's in this and saying, oh, hopefully, oh, this is great. And we saw all this in 2016 as well with the launch of the last plan, Rebuilding Ireland, which didn't achieve any of its targets. It's not meant to achieve its targets. It's meant to appease the developers and the banks and the system that's there. So I don't know, like what frustrates me sometimes on the left is that people aren't grasping this. People are thinking, you know, we'll just ask nicely. And sooner or later, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, the Greens, Labour Party, whoever's in government at the time, sooner or later, they'll feel a bit of sympathy and they'll try and address this issue. It's not going to be addressed in that way. So I don't know, Michelle, if you have any observations on any of this stuff at all.
Well, just from, I suppose, like from a renter's perspective as well, like there's nothing there in it. You know, it doesn't end evictions into homelessness. It doesn't help reduce any rents. It doesn't like, there's no break for renters at all in it anyway, and there's no increase in security for tenure. So like we can talk about, you know, building houses and all of that, but for a lot of people in my generation, that like even owning a house is like out of reach, and like we've had that discussion here. So in the meantime, while you're trying to rent or whatever, if you're lucky to be able to rent, you have no security there either. Like it's just, yeah, it's just, yeah, it did, like I had no expectation of the plan fixing anything anyway. And there's so many gaps in it as well that it's going to be left up to people on the left to plug those gaps as well. And like, Dara O'Brien can't even stand over his own plan. Like, the interview in the Indo is actually embarrassing. Like, and it's not disappointing, but unsurprising as well. Just to see, like, literally his interview is printed verbatim. But where is the actual plan? Where's the details of the plan? Where, you know, there's no real overview of, like, here's all the the bullet points, what's in it. Not everyone's going to read that plan. It was like 150, 160 pages long. And as you say, it is a plan that isn't really supposed to be able to be achievable. It's a branding exercise. It's a PR exercise. It's a press release with no real accountability structures and no real follow-up until obviously like an election and people will be like, oh, he's terrible. We'll get rid of him and just replace him with someone else who's vaguely the same or whatever, you know. So, yeah, look, disappointing. But, I don't really know what else to say about it at this point. Like, you know, it's set up to be designed to line the private developers' pockets. Like, if you look at the 4 billion figure, 1 billion of that is for HAP alone. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no, like, Dara uses the term investment. That's not investment. That's just giving money to landlords. Like, that's not investment. If you're talking about investment, you're talking about building public homes that the state will own. You're talking about that. That's what investment is. Like, you can bandy around, you know, billions of euros of figures, but it really matters where that money goes to. And I think that was like crucially missed in all of this.
Yeah, I just read out a couple of the bits that are covered in terms of what's included in the plan. So the document commits to building 90,000 social homes, as well as 36,000 affordable purchase, 18,000 cost rental, which Conor has gone through some of that. And then 156,000 private purchase or rental homes. And like, you think to yourself, like, who do they think they're pulling the wool over the eyes of? Like, who do they think they're fooling here that they know that the private sector is going to build 156,000 private homes? The private sector has refused to build for you know, we've spoken about this on the podcast before, like, about how when nurses go on strike, there's a big backlash because they withdraw their labour. And the same with any public servants that go on strike, there's a big backlash. But the developers for years withdrew their labour. When I say withdrew their labour, refused to build. And there was no backlash, and people just sat back and allowed them to do it. And it's one of the reasons we're in the situation we're in right now. These guys are going to build as many houses as they feel like building, as long as they can make, as they say themselves, a 15% profit. They will not build for anything less than 15% profit. And therefore, my logic on this one is, if they're demanding 15% profit, then we can build everything for 15% cheaper if we build it through the state itself. Connor, you wanted in on it.
Yeah, not to defend developers, but I'm going to defend developers. This is a weird world. There is a strike that is going on, but it's an investment strike, and it's been led by the banks. Like, we have to go back, I think, constantly back to 2008 and just what happened there. So the banks are so regulated now. And are so cautious. Irish banks have some of the worst records. Have some of the worst kind of records in terms of giving out business loans and loans anyway. One of the dominant forms of credit in Irish business is inter-business credit, where businesses will not demand payment until end of the quarter. And so forth, because banks just there's a real kind of loan strike that is going on from Irish banks. That's where the international finance kind of comes in. They're being brought, instead of actually fixing that, which would be through a state bank or a state kind of entity that would actually get those, you know, small builders. Those who will build, you know, on the corner of the sites, those who will build 5 units there, 10 units there, they're not getting funding, from banks. The plan itself acknowledges this and talks about the LDA buying them out. But all the LDA is going to do is buy out that kind of planning permission, bundle it all together, and then give it to a multinational who then build it. On block. So the problem is credit, and that can be fixed by the state, and the state is refusing to do that because it goes against the interests of the pillar banks, who don't want a competition from the state kind of coming in, even though the state owns one of the pillar banks in like AIB. So that's one of the blockages, is that banks, there's an investment strike that's going on, and it's mainly from the Irish kind of banking kind of system. So transnational capital has been brought in to try and kind of address that. But the solution is not more transnational kind of capital, more which is the plan, to have road shows going around the world. So have like Dara O'Brien flying in there everywhere. I hope you might start wearing a tie. That actually gets on my fucking tits. This, you know, that, like, you know, that the, like, what is this? The guy from the HSE, you know, he does it as well. Tie-less, like, where the fucking tie, you know?
Because he's cool, Connor. You know?
Oh my, like you know,
at the top, you know, it looks relaxed and cool. I'm cool, head minister.
Like, you're not some, well, maybe it is, you know, like, it's a real kind of centrist dad going through his second divorce, fucking look like, you know? And, you know, and it's there going, like, what are you doing? Anyway, that's another kind of rant. But, like, so the issue here is quite straightforward. There needs to be a state investment bank for housing. And that can be done through a multiple of ways. The credit unions can be organized. The credit unions themselves shouldn't be, like, they should have accounts with the central bank, which that itself is being blocked. So they're being charged kind of full whack, you know, by kind of private banks. So that's one of the solutions there. So when you have credit to a state bank in place, then you've got the land that is state owned as well. So now you've got two of the huge kind of pieces of this puzzle. All that's missing then is kind of materials and is kind of workforce as well. And if you're buying kind of state housing, if you're building kind of state housing, you're not building on a 30-year cycle. You're building on a 100-year cycle. You're hoping to get two or three families out of this kind of one kind of housing unit. That's what you're looking forward to. So when that happens, price itself starts to kind of weaken. So the solutions here are, one, to tackle the monopoly on credit, which the pillar banks have, because they're not doing their job, and the state can actually step in and do that. There are ways around kind of state aid rules. Germany does it all the time. And then it moves into the land. They have the land. I'm very conscious that I've talked a lot kind of during this one, but like on the land thing, the land does not have the land does not give itself the value it holds when it comes to construction. Land has value in construction because of the legal paper that's put on that land, either through rezoning and or kind of planning and permission. These are two pieces of state paper. The state controls that paper. What the state can do in the morning is put a sunset clause in every single rezoning in the state, every single planning permission, and then tell them you have to reapply if you want to use it. But when you do apply, there's new kind of taxes on land. So that if it's rezoned, you'll end up, you know, paying kind of taxes, you know, if it goes up then on value. That would kill the land kind of speculation overnight, because the land does not have the value. It's the legal paper that's with it does, and the state has full control of that. Does that make sense, or am I just...
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, So you have them talking about, oh, there's blockages in land. There's no blockages on land. There are land banks being held by like private capital. And the reason why they're holding them is that they've borrowed on the back of those land banks. They don't want to build on those land banks. Those land banks are being used as capital for borrowings. That's their purpose now. That's all they are. They are a sink for value because of the legal paper that's been issued by the state that is tied to that land. You can kill that legal paper the same way that it was born, through legislation. So all these solutions are all there. They are legislative solutions that are there in terms of a state bank, in terms of killing kind of land kind of speculation overnight. And that would mean kind of wiping out some of those kind of land hoarders. But even with them, when they get wiped out, the worst that will happen to a land hoarder, the worst that will happen to them, if their wealth is like wiped out, is that they'd have to live like the rest of us. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the worst that will happen to them. They'd have to live like the rest of us live. And that is such a shock and that is such a horror that you have like Dara O'Brien, I'm getting my spokespeople mixed up again. But like, you know, they're doing that just to kind of protect that whole kind of system. But it can be done in the doll. It can be done in 3 weeks. I am going to shut up now because like people are just like tuning out. They have to be.
Well, just on that, on the ability to change the legislation on some of this stuff, but it is the front page story of the Business Post. I haven't got into great detail on it about this piece where I think if you bought land between 2015 and 2021, you're excluded from the social housing contributions that everybody else is going to have to make. So apparently it says, I don't like the headline, it says government loses 10,000 affordable homes amid fears of legal backlash. I don't think they're losing it. They're making a very conscious decision. When I lose things, it's by accident generally. I don't lose things on purpose. They're deliberately excluding these people who bought land between 2015 and 2021 from having to provide social housing. So it shows you how committed they are to this stuff. I had another point that I was going to make. Yeah, just on it. And it goes back to the workers. Have we got sufficient workers in this as well? But on the piece in the Business Post here, I think it's by Killian Woods. It is. What about the effect on carbon emissions? And I'm not going to get into great detail about that, but we also know that there's a major crisis on our hands around climate change. And when we talk about needing an extra 27,500 people to work in the construction industry to achieve these goals, we still need a major retrofitting plan going across the country too. So all that stuff is discounted. There's hundreds, literally hundreds of thousands of homes that need retrofitting, and we don't have the capacity to do it. So, I mean, we're really in the midst of a perfect storm here. And what they're trying to do is everybody jump out of this sinking ship and jump into the lifeboat that's sinking also. So it's a little bit frustrating. I don't know, Michelle, if you've got anything else you wanted to jump in on this, or if you have any other stories that you've been looking at that you wanted to cover.
Yeah, only if you're finished up on the house analysis stuff. There wasn't too much other depth of analysis in the Indo on the housing thing. So there is a couple of other stories just around the mother and baby homes is coming back up. So officers are interviewing some of the baby home complainants. So 35 people have come forward around like actually talking about criminal actions about what's happened, obviously, in the mother and baby home. So they've been gathering witness statements there. There is talk as well about examining some Tuam and Galway as well, and Bressborough and Cork as actual crime scenes now off the back of these interviews. So look, there's some justice there maybe happening where people might feel like they're finally been able to talk about the crimes that were committed and they're being listened to. There's talks of like phone calls that were going on for 2 and 3 hours with the guards. But yeah, it's just something to note because I know obviously that was a story that a lot of people were very interested in hearing about. Also, there's a story on page 2 of the Indo as well around Coveney funds research into bias in Northern media. So basically Simon Coveney is commissioning research on the use of language in Northern media, saying that like they're playing and the role that it kind of plays in the public debate on the issue of a united Ireland. So so they're kind of like looking at all of the papers. Obviously the papers tend to be quite binary in the north, kind of like the newsletter and the Belfast Telegraph kind of for a unionist audience, and then the Irish News is traditionally for a more nationalist outlook, as it says in the article. He says he wants to have this research so that like I think the tender reads the positive negative contribution that this makes to addressing division and deepening understanding of a constitutional issue. So it's going to be really interesting to see what that comes out. But they're expecting to have the research by the end of the year on how the media is impacting the United Ireland debate in the North. So I'm sure people will be interested to see what that says.
Yeah, definitely one to watch. I'm going to raise one here that I think is an interesting story, but probably might be of same irrelevant to other people. But council to tackle problem of trucks that take toll-free detour route. And this is a very interesting one, that the up to 600 trucks a day are passing through the heritage town of Abbey Leaks, most likely to avoid paying tolls on the M8. I read through the article and I found it interesting for a number of reasons. Obviously, first of all, that we've privatized our roads and it's not suiting the people who need to make the profits that these trucks are bypassing their literal toll bridge and avoiding it. And but one of the other things that it states in it is that it's actually 7 kilometers less to go through Abbey Leaks. So these trucks are actually saving the environment by going through Abbey Leaks. And it doesn't say that in the article, but it's literally what's happening is that they're taking a shorter route than being proposed. And what we know what's going to happen. There's going to be legislation of some sort to prevent trucks from entering Abbey Leaks to force these people to pay tolls that they don't need to pay to go a shorter route. But there's a whole spread there by Michael Brennan on this issue with a nice little map to show you the little shortcut of going through Abbey Leaks and what that means. But, you know, it's that whole capitalist privatized the road systems, force people into it. And these are the companies, by the way, these private toll companies, we spoke about this a couple of weeks, and maybe it was last week we spoke about it, where they're guaranteed their profits. Like the state steps in to subsidize them if they don't get enough. So here's the state trying to force trucks back out to reduce the state's contribution. But at the damage to the environment, because these trucks have to go further distance. So I found that one interesting. And another one just to and maybe Connor might have wanted to speak about this one because he mentioned about a state bank. But there is an article there in the Business Post as well about the state may sell off more of its AIB shares. And this comes on the back of it selling off more of its Bank of Ireland shares. AIB is the one they have the majority of the ownership in there too. So I don't know. I don't know if we're getting closer to having a state bank when we're actually selling off the shares we have on them. So I don't know, Connor, do you want to come in on anything here? Have you got any other stories or do you want to?
Yeah, I have three kind of silly ones, you know. One is in the Sindo, Gardaí deal, significant blow to HSE computer hackers. And what they've done is that it says that the Gardaí have seized websites. And all I could think of was Zoolander, you know, the files are in the computer, you know. How the bejesus do you seize a fucking website? They're on, it's a bit like the sea is closed, you know, like it's a bit like they actually go into it then kind of later on and say they have to admit that they've seized the kind of domains which the hackers are using. And then the guards have to admit then later on that the gang behind the HSE attack could now set up new domains, because that's what you do. You don't seize a fucking website. You seize a kind of, anyway, I just thought it was mad. And then there was one other one here. It's an ad for the Cyber Security Summit. And tickets start at like €95. And one of the guest speakers is Fran Thompson of the HSE Cyber Kind of Security Summit. I'll save this kind of €95 here. Now, lads, just don't use Windows 7. But it's unbelievable. Like what's Fran going to say in terms of cyber kind of security, but that's kind of €95. And it's interesting how many of these weird alpha male-esque kind of summits are being advertised in the Business Post. Every week there's another one, and they're being charged like €200 to basically hear, you know, the like Tom Cruise character from Magnolia just kind of shout away. And then finally, in the classified ads of the Sunday Business Post, there's an ad from jerrynisk16@gmail.com where he's calling for, if you have any properties, please email me. So email jerrynisk16@gmail.com. Doesn't look dodgy at all, having a Gmail account and asking people for their property details. But that's a Business Post for me anyway.
I'm just going to go over one story that I picked up from Twitter, actually, from our co-host, and one of the tweets that she put out, and it was a Mick Clifford article. I haven't actually bought the paper myself. It's in the Examiner, I think yesterday's Examiner, and it's about the goings on in the Inner City Helping Homeless charity, and in relation to the death of Anthony Flynn. And we won't get into great detail about it, but I just want to cover something that was pointed out there in her tweet, which is that Mick Clifford's article, you know, was talking about how, like, you know, it's critical, I suppose, of the state's attempt, the state failing in services like homelessness, and then others having, well-meaning people having to step in and do the job of what should be a state facility, and it's again on the back of all the housing stuff we've spoken about, that the Inner City Helping Homeless and the hundreds of volunteers that they got stepped in there. But in his article, he's saying that, you know, we should learn lessons from this, and one of the lessons he talks about is that there should be stronger vetting, or there should be vetting of people. Now, from what Claire has tweeted there, she's talking about how vetting was in place for Inner City Helping Homeless and all the other homelessness charities, that the Gardaí did do vetting right up until 2019. And all of the people that's referred to in the article were vetted and looked at, and there was no issues around that. And that's not what the issue in concern in relation to the stories around this stuff is, but that Inner City Helping Homelessness have got huge governance structures there, and they do abide by everything and all the rest of it. But one of the criticisms that seems to be in Claire's tweet is in relation to in 2019, the decision by the Garda Vetting Bureau to stop vetting people who deal with homelessness, because homeless people are not deemed to be vulnerable categories. Now, if you look at homelessness, and anyone that's been close to the homelessness issue knows that there's people with mental health issues, and there's people with addiction issues. There's a whole range of issues. It's a very complex one. So for the Gardaí to determine, no, look, there's no issue around people working with homelessness, is just wrong. So I just wanted to touch off that before moving on to one other story that really annoyed me, and that was in the Friday's Examiner, actually. And I won't be long on this one because it's just a stupid story, but it's how, I suppose, the Anglo world sort of presents different international affairs. But it says, world needs China to reduce carbon emissions. And that's from US envoy John Kerry. And I'm just like, seriously, lads, anyone that's paid attention to climate change and knows has watched what's going on. So I immediately just did a quick dig on the comparisons between carbon emissions in the United States versus China per capita. China has 7 tons of carbon per capita, and the United States has over 15. So the United States is twice as bad as China in terms of climate change. But we presented in our papers in Ireland that it's China that needs to do the hard graft. Now, in reality, both countries, we need them to fucking do something about emissions. I'm not defending China's record whatsoever, but I just hate that stuff of, you know, a US senator, a former senator and presidential candidate says something and we just repeat what he's saying. And it's just nonsense. Just look at the fucking data. US is far worse, twice as bad, literally twice as bad. And yet you're presenting it as if China's the problem. Michelle, you had a couple of other stories you wanted to get to.
Yeah, there's a story here about the Leaving Cert. So obviously, Leaving Cert results came out this week. My brother was one of the ones that are getting those results. But this article talks about the Leaving Cert grade inflation that everyone's kind of freaking out. Like, oh God, they've all done well. What do we do now? Oh Jesus, we didn't see this coming. So yeah, it's talking about how they're going to cope with the fact that there's going to be more people wanting to go to college, but not wanting to go to college. I think that's how it's framed. Like, it talks about how an additional 4,500 places are going to be added to cope with the demand. But they're talking about the demand that has been created over, you know, they're saying inflated CEO results. So the demand is essentially more people now qualify for the points in colleges. But are they saying that 4,500 people up to this point have been blocked every year because of the structure of the CEO points? Is that what we're actually hearing here? Because that's what I'm reading from it. Like, the way it's been sold is like, oh God, more people just, you know, they're demanding more of it because of the points. But like, for me, what I'm reading is thousands of students have been locked out of education because of the CEO structure, that point structure. But yeah, it talks about more like funding more third level places. And obviously there's a much wider conversation to be had there. But like, of course, the lead of the discussion is to reform the state exams. Like, everyone's doing too well, we better reform them. Like, that's not what the conversation is that we're happening. And they want to reform the state exams so they can keep more people locked out of third level education. And on top of like the cost barriers, we need to make sure that the grades are brought down so that people don't qualify for courses. Really weird reading. You know, they're obviously not reporting it like that, but yeah, kind of shocking to see that many people are being blocked due to our CEO points structure. There's another piece as well that I wanted to touch on as well. It's in the worldwide news and the Sindo as well. The EU army would hurt NATO and divide Europe. So this is a different angle that I'm used to reading in here, but it's essentially, it says a new European Union military force advocated by senior EU officials after the fall of Afghanistan would weaken the transatlantic alliance and divide Europe, said NATO's Secretary General. So like, they're talking about this rapid reaction force off the back of everything that's been happening. And they're talking as well about the need to be able to act independently from the US. But what they're actually talking about, like, obviously, like, you know, the EU is obsessed with this, like, you know, increased militarization of the EU and all of that. But they're talking about a unit of up to 20,000 troops, which they're going to be able to deploy quickly across the globe. A proposal for this to be presented in November. That's shocking, like, that 20,000 more soldiers into this EU army. But yeah, I'd be interested to see where that conversation develops. But I need to give it a mention anyway, because I'm sure we'll touch on it again when more details come out.
Speaking of warmongers, right? There's an article there on Declan Ganley in the Sunday Business Post. Ganley shelves plan for respirator as threat from COVID-19 recedes. And he's sitting there in the image looking like a serial killer staring at me while I'm reading this out here. But basically, the article's about how he's been working on, or he invested or set up a new company to look at respirators that are... it says for frontline staff and all the rest of it, but it's one of the ones where you'd probably have an oxygen tank or something and you'd be able to walk around with it. Like, it's a ventilator for yourself walking around. But he's very disappointed by the sounds of things that the COVID wasn't as bad as he thought it was going to be, and people don't need these respirators. So he's putting this plan for this new product on the shelf until a worse pandemic comes. So he's sitting patiently waiting for for something from a movie to come out that's just going to kill all of us so that he has this lovely product that he can charge whatever fucking amount of money he wants to do. And then the last story I really have, I'll come to you, Connor, next about this, but there's an article there right beside the Declan Ganley one about remote staff should see how other half lives. I'm only giving this a little mention because it's talking about how, you know, it's almost trying to play office workers against everybody else. It's almost trying to say, you know, if you're looking, if you're complaining about having to, you know, go back to the office now, think about those everyone else that didn't have the option. And he goes through, and he's right in saying this, like, retail workers must look on with bemusement that a conversation between employers and staff about returning to work has taken place, like, because obviously they've had to work through the pandemic and they should have been adequately rewarded for it, retail workers. But the reason I raise it is because of that whole, here we go again. It used to be play public sector workers against private sector workers. It's always a competition between someone. There's nothing wrong with workers, office workers working at home. Our big problem is that the workers that didn't have an opportunity to do any of that stuff weren't rewarded fairly enough throughout the last 18 months or even before that. But I don't know, Connor, if you have any other stories you wanted to get into.
No, I mean, just on kind of Michelle's thing there, like about kind of an army. Did you see the Sunday Indo's People and Culture page? I'll try and hold it up to you there. There's an ex kind of army ranger who's carrying a log because, you know, he's a hard man, like, you know, and he's there and he's got a kind of Grant and Phil Mitchell kind of look to him as well, you know. So all I get from this is that Army Rangers in Ireland just like carry logs all day. That's that seems to be what they do, which is probably why they're not used in actual conflicts, because who brings a log to a gunfight?
And it's
probably Army Rangers do. See, look at that. Like he shows up in like Kabul off the plane with a fucking log on his shoulder to go, nah, lads, it's okay. We've got this, you know?
And it probably feeds
in. Between them talking about the guard seizing websites and then this kind of like weird, like a weird, it's kind of like a pinup.
It's very
strange. Army Ranger.
It's very strange.
The location of like, this, like, oh, I don't know. Anyway, this really weird photo on the front of the People and Culture section.
Have you seen the snapper? Have you?
My mag, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a very strange film to watch like today, because it's basically it's sexual abuse and there's no abortion, so she has to have the kid. But like in it, her brother comes back from the lab and he has no Jesus bullets in his gun. But remember that bit, Reverend? That's all that I can think about here is that it's the Arabs and you have to mesmerize them. That's what you do. And you mesmerize them with a log on your shoulder. That's what you do. You know, like grow fucking up, man, and get rid of the goatee. It doesn't suit you.
There's even more photos of him looking sternly into the camera.
It really is.
Pulling over people into more military action, Irish military action in Afghanistan. They call him a Power Ranger. There's more. There's actually about 10 photos of him carrying logs, looking steely into the camera. And one with him with a Santa hat and a gun and a dog. Yeah. Like,
don't mess with me or I'll use me martial arts on you, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just running me this way, you know? I mean, it's just, oh, I don't know, whatever. I talk about life under fire in Afghanistan.
But no real analysis as to why they were there in the first place.
Yeah, and why is he carrying a log in fucking Afghanistan? Like,
was it an Irish log he brought over? Or
I bloody well hope so. Well, I mean...
That feeds into one of the other articles I read in one of the papers today.
Martial arts.
I don't know if you saw it, but there's an article about civil servants being dragged in for a bollocking about not having their forestry targets reached. It could be part of that. It could be his fault.
No wonder he's stealing all the bleeding trees he is. Look at him.
I was convinced.
Ray Goggins. Fair play to you, Ray.
I know you read the Business Post, Connor, so I was convinced that you were going to cover this article, and we don't need to cover it because I didn't actually read the whole lot of it, but Mary Harney has an article.
Oh, yes. Oh, God, yes.
Go for it if you want.
No, I mean, it's Mary Harney, and she actually says about, you know, she talks about what the HSE and our health system could be in the future. We live in the future she created. The future she created was she was Minister for Health, and she was the real one who really kind of privatized through like outsourcing. That was her way of actually kind of how do you privatize in Ireland and not privatize? Well, you outsource, you know? And she was the real kind of gung-ho for it, including outsourcing cervical check to like cut costs. That was all in her watch. And now she has the neck to like show up forever and say, forever, I have a vision for the future of health. We live in your vision. We have your vision now. And it's shit. Sorry.
Sorry, it's my fault. Like
I've just been shouting at listeners all day. Sorry. Housing and Mary Harney, it's not good for the soul on a Sunday.
Yeah, no, I was shocked to see it, but it's this brass neck that certain people have in this country that
you know. Said, this is their newsletter. This is the Irish middle class's newsletter, where they just like this is their kind of their local kind of village kind of news, like newsletters, where they talk to each other in their own language and with their own self of what is right and wrong. And the rest of us are all just like pressed up against the window going, what the fuck are they on? You know?
Yeah, Mary Harney, former Minister for Health.
We live in her future. Like, we live in her vision. Yeah. We're living it today.
900,000.
She has the cheek to then say, wherever, I've got more of them.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Get back to the States.
900,000 people on hospital waiting lists at the moment. And we all know we had lockdowns in this country more so than anywhere else as a result of the dilapidated healthcare system that she helped to create. And her headline is, "A health system fit for the future could be COVID-19 silver lining." I was just, when I saw the headline and then I saw her face underneath it, I was going, oh my God.
And the worst thing about it, and sorry for Rican Rants and Honest, that Mary Haney has talent. That's the real killer here. You know, she's formidable, like smartest, you know, as fuck, like, and just use the cross over to the dark side, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, our Thatcher, I suppose, one of them. Right. Okay. Well,
I just hate seeing talent just like she was real. Like, there are very few talented politicians. She was one of them. She could have been Taoiseach.
Yeah.
And you just see what she just, well, just what happened there, you know? Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, she's still fairly well employed in the healthcare industry and working for Roche Pharmaceuticals and all these other little bits. And wasn't she the chairperson of the University of Limerick at one point as well? And they always seem to get these great gigs afterwards. But look, this has been The Week at Work. I've been your host, David Gibney. I want to thank Conor McCabe and Michelle Byrne for joining me. And once again, if you can support us, you can do so by sharing on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever you use yourself. Tell other people, share it on WhatsApp. And of course, if you want to, or if you can, if you're in a position to, we'd love your support on our Patreon as well. Patreon.com/leftblock. Thanks again. We talk to you all next week.